This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we start today on Beacon Hill, where 5 years have passed since the Massachusetts Equal Pay Act took effect. Yet, women and people of color are still paid yet less, and in fact, the gap has widened, according to census data analyzed by the Boston Globe. So the question of how that could be, among other questions, was at the heart of a hearing on Tuesday by the state's Joint Committee on Labor and Workforce Development. The committee's looking at two bills that advocates say can close racial and gender pay gaps. For many who testified, like Liliana Carter Hoffman, a fifth grader at Boston's Advent School, it is about time.
Why should women be paid equally? Because anything a man can do, a woman can do. A woman may have to work more than a man and be paid less. So we need more information to know if this is actually happening. Data matters. My parents paid the same tuition as my male friends. I will not receive a discount based on my gender when I apply for college, buy a house, or pay for utilities. So why pay me less?
So joining us now, three advocates for the bills. Here in Studio 2, Megan Driscoll. She is a member of the Wage Equity Now Coalition Steering Committee, also the founder and former CEO of PharmaLogix, a global recruiting firm based locally, and Brooke Thompson, Executive Vice President of Government Affairs at Associated Industries of Massachusetts, or AIM. Megan, welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Great to have you, Brooke. Welcome to you, too.
Thank you, and good morning.
And then on the line, Aneta Roman, CEO of Amplify Latinx, a local nonprofit advancing Latinx leadership, economic prosperity, and civic engagement. She's also an attorney and an entrepreneur with her own practice. Aneta, thanks for joining us as well.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, Megan, I'll start with you. Hearing Liliana Carter Hoffman just then, what comes to mind for you, you know, sort of out of the mouths of babes there?
Yeah, we were talking about this earlier. It was such a powerful aspect of the hearing overall, because I think when we look at what it is that we are doing this for our younger generation. I mean, that is why we are devoting all of this time and all of us working together to make this happen, is that we don't want our young women to have the same struggles that we have. It's not fair that we should be talking about this in 2023. We do not want to be talking about this again in 2050. So now is really the time. And she beautifully articulated that.
And Brooke Thompson, also 2024, 2025, 2026 could be much better for workers who are working right now.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're in a still very uncertain economy. And we know that in the wake of COVID, people can live anywhere, they can work anywhere, and the competition for talent is fierce. And so if Massachusetts is going to continue to be able to attract and retain the best talent, we need to equitably pay our workforce. And that's why our organization and our members are supporting this legislation.
So I wanted to dig into the data here a little bit. And Aneta will put front and center that the pay gap is larger for women of color, even. For example, Black women make 58 cents for every dollar a white male worker earns. According to the American Association of University Women, Latinas are compensated at just 54% of non-Hispanic workers. Talk about that intersectionality.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Susanna. So yes, I mean, I will illustrate what this means over a 40-year career, because it is estimated that Latinas stand to lose over $1 million due to this wage gap. This is according to the National Women's Law Center. So let's assume that a Latina and her white male counterpart both start working at 20. The estimate, according to this data, is that due to this wage gap, a Latina will have to work until age 92 to earn what her white male peer earned by age 60. So that's an extra 32 years of labor to catch up. So it's just pretty, you know, it's pretty stunning to see that in numbers and, you know, to realize what this represents over the lifetime of a Latina.
So, Megan, you know, the thought of working an extra 32 years is exhausting in one's bones. Let's lay some additional Massachusetts data over that. Women earn 86 cents for every dollar a man makes, according to the National Women's Law Center here in the Commonwealth. What does that mean in terms of the gap for earnings for an average worker here in the Commonwealth?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you actually see it across the board. So you're seeing it at entry-level workers all the way through. And one of the other issues that I think is, you know, we need to really highlight is that oftentimes, as example, if you have two entry-level grads, both of a variety of different races, let's say, they may start off at the same amount as their base salary. What's happening is they're not moving forward. So white men and men in general are increasing their salaries and their pay at a much faster rate than women and people of color. And there's where the wealth gap really sort of shines the most. And so we not only have to work to pay people fairly when they start, but we have to look at the inequities once people are in those seats. A really terrible statistic that I read, I think it came out of Harvard, was they asked about 1,000 women at 24 years old whether they had their eye on the C-suite. And about 60% of them said they did. They asked those same women 4 short years later whether or not they were would be interested in the C-suite. It dropped to 20%. So there's something happening in those first couple years that they enter the workforce that they're seeing that's not possible for them for a variety of different reasons. And that has to change. It's a cultural change. It's a systemic issue.
So I do want to move to the proposed legislation. I just want to hit one more key point here. Pandemic on our mind. We're actually going to do an Ask the Doctors as we come to the end of the public health emergencies here. Brooke, a little sound from Massachusetts Attorney General Andrea Campbell at the hearing Tuesday about the impacts of COVID.
We are at a critical moment as we can still see the economic fallout of the pandemic. The pandemic set women's workforce participation back 30 years, and we have still not yet fully rebounded and recovered. Black, Hispanic, and Latina women were especially hard hit.
And we've talked about those disparities. Do we have a sense, and you may not have the answer for this, does it take 30 years to catch up for being set back 30 years?
Well, let's hope not. I think that's why we at AIM are focused on passing legislation like this. We know, as the Attorney General said, that Massachusetts was hit disproportionately hard with respect to our female workforce. A lot of that is because our traditional strong industries employ a lot of women: healthcare, retail, hospitality, education. And so we do have work to do, but we also have an opportunity. And that's why at AIM, both through this legislation and through our Pink Slip Initiative, we are trying to bring employers not just to the conversation, but to lead the conversation and finding solutions.
So we're talking about the racial and gender pay gaps in Massachusetts. Two bills being proposed right now. We've got Megan Driscoll of Wage Equity Now, Brooke Thompson of Associated Industries, and Neda Roman of Amplify Latinx. And Neda, we were supposed to have fixed this. So 2016, we pass a bill, a Massachusetts Equal Pay Act. It goes into effect in 2018. A key thing that it does is we can no longer ask a job applicant's salary history, because if you've already been paid less, right, then if we don't ask, we can be blind about that in future employment. It doesn't play out the way we think it's supposed to, Anita. Talk about that.
Correct, yes, because while there's been great good intention to close the wage gap and opportunity gaps for women, the question, instead of shifting from, you know, what is your previous salary, it is shifted to what is your salary expectation, right? And so when you don't have a range of a salary range for the role that you're applying for, then you are most likely going to base your expectation on your previous salary. And when you've already, you're coming from a lower end, if you will, of a salary, then you're not going to probably ask what you deserve and what perhaps the employer is willing to pay. So we want to shift the hiring practices and pay practices within the job titles and promotion practices by making sure that we, there's more transparency in the process so that women don't get stuck with lower paying jobs. Because, you know, if you're giving an employer a lower salary than the ballpark that they're hoping to pay you, then you might not end up getting paid what they could have paid you to begin with.
All right. So, Megan, we've got two bills up for discussion, sponsored by Senators Pat Jalin and Paul Feeney. House members are Josh Cutler and David Rogers, among others. Very quickly, break down what the two bills propose.
Sure. So the salary range transparency bill would require that all companies with 15 or more employees would be sharing the salary range for the job when they post the job externally. There are 10 other states that have passed this law, these laws already. There are at least 15 other states that have it on their books to pass as well. So Massachusetts is behind. If we pass this, we're behind. The second part of that bill would also require that companies share the salary range for the role to an employee who asks. So what we know that contributes to the wage gap is that women and people of color often earn within a range, but they earn at the bottom of the range. So this is giving employees a tool to understand where they sit within that range so they can have a more productive conversation about what skills do I need to add, what kind of responsibilities do I need to take on to better myself within that range.
And I'm going to pause you there. The other thing, as I understand it, is on the salary range thing, as Aneta was just saying, now we ask, what are your salary expectations? Historically, women and people of color anchor lower than a white male would on those salary expectations.
Correct.
So this range closes that likely gap.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm the owner of one of the largest recruiting firms in all of Boston. And so when we saw the 2018 pay equity law take place, I was really concerned about how it was going to affect women, women and people of color, but employers alike. Because when you take out that question of what are you earning, you eliminate the only real thing in the negotiation process. And we know that men are better negotiators. And what we found is that we would have men and women earning the same amount, their expectations, the men's expectations that they would state would be sometimes 50% higher than what they were currently earning.
So briefly give us the second bill.
The second bill is a wage data bill. And essentially, it's a very simple bill. One of the reasons why we're struggling to solve this wealth and wage and racial gap is because we don't understand how bad it is. Our data is a small set, and so we struggle to really understand. The EEOC, which is a federal government body, requires that companies fill in an EEOC form. It's information about the numbers of Latinos in an organization, their pay. It's very encompassing. And companies have to fill that out anyway. And so what we're asking is that upon submitting that to the federal government, that they're also going to submit it to the state. And the state would allow for that information to be put out at an aggregate. So it would remain private, but we would have a really good handle on how bad the wage gaps are.
So Brooke, I'm going to turn to you on this for a second. I want to illustrate this for listeners, though. So there was some testimony on Tuesday from professional soccer player Samantha Mewis, who lives in Dorchester. She and U.S. soccer teammates famously brought an equal pay lawsuit against the U.S. Soccer Federation, settled in their favor. And she talks about the importance of this transparency thing.
Without understanding the financial benefits and resources the men were receiving, we wouldn't have even known the levels of discrimination that we were facing. These bills would make more data available on gender and racial pay gaps by including salary ranges in job postings. We know that leveling the playing field in this way and shining a light on these pay disparities is the first step to ensuring equal pay for equal work.
So I want to give you a two-part question here, Brooke. In 2016, with the last act, AIM was slower to endorse, slower to come to the table. AIM is more out front here. Why the difference, A, and what gives you optimism that these two bills would work when the last time it didn't play out the way we thought it would?
No, I appreciate the question. So I would say, you know, AIM has evolved as our economy has evolved, right? And so we are continuing to look as the situation involving our workforce and what the needs are, and what really we are amplifying on behalf of our members are the things that are important to them. And I talk to members all the time from over 150 different industries that we represent, and they're all saying, I want a more diverse workforce. I want to bring in different people from different backgrounds because it makes me as an employer and the work product that I put out better. And so again, that's where, as a member organization, we want to come to the table and bring solutions. Do I think these two things are going to solve it overnight? No, that we have a lot of work to do. But I'm super optimistic that everybody is at the table here and that this is going to continue to give us different tools. Because as Samantha said, and as Megan said, information is important. Again, employers are, for the most part, trying to improve and bring in more diverse workforce. Maybe they don't understand the full gaps that they have or understand why there are some of these inconsistencies. So that information will absolutely help.
So, Aneta, I'm going to play a little sound for you. One more testimony from the hearing. This is the Joint Committee on Labor and Workforce Development hearing Tuesday. This is former Lieutenant Governor Evelyn Murphy.
For decades, our approach has been to fix women and fix people of color. By that, I mean we have to get more education. We have to work longer. We have to work harder. We have to choose professions that pay better. But after fixing us, the wage gap has not been eliminated. And in fact, it remains, by federal data, very high, 18 cents for women and 25 cents for people of color, respectively. That is unconscionable.
All right. So these two bills look to push on different levers, right? She's looking back and saying, we pushed on other levers. We had a faulty sense of what needed to be fixed. New theories about what needs to be fixed, pushing on these levers. These bills have made it out of committee before. They didn't make it all of the way. Do you believe in these hypotheses? And in this moment where most of our constitutional offices here in the state are held by women, but these bills or things similar have made it out of committee before, will they get passed this time?
I hope so. I think now is the right time. And again, it's a workforce imperative. If Massachusetts is going to continue to be strong, have a strong economy, and really bring people of color and women into the C-suite and elevate them and continue to be successful, now is the time. And I think we have the right momentum. And again, all the parties are at the table, which I think is when you get the best result.
Anita, do you share that optimism?
I do, because I truly believe that these bills do accomplish this, the outcome without necessarily putting the employer at a competitive disadvantage, and also without burdensome reporting, because these are all already requirements, right? And also without this blame and shame tactics that, some people might be afraid of. I mean, at the end of the day, former Lieutenant Governor said, we've always put the burden on women, right, and minorities, and it's only half of the battle, because the other half of the responsibility lies with the employers. And, and this is part of making sure that we have transparency in hiring practices and pay practices, and also promotion, because at the end of the day, we just mentioned earlier that promotion is not necessarily as effective for women than it is for men. And we want to make sure that Massachusetts is competitive, is welcoming, and in this tight labor market that we're facing, this legislation can truly play an important part in the sustainability of our overall economic momentum. So I think, it would just increase the commitment to business growth and employer productivity. So I see it as a win-win.
All right. Anita Roman is the CEO of Amplify Latinx, Megan Driscoll, member of the Wage Equity Now Coalition Steering Committee, and Brooke Thompson, Executive Vice President of Government Affairs at Associated Industries of Massachusetts. Thanks to all three of you.
Thank you.